this meeting. We have two issues on the agenda, honourable members. May I just quickly rectify one issue? There was miscommunication around the. You will see on the original agenda, we only have a briefing on Zimbabwe. I mean the one that was sent to you. However, the intention was to have both a briefing on an update following the last briefing we had on Western Sahara because of the latest developments that have taken place. Secondly, we then have the briefing on the also an update in terms of the referendum on Zimbabwe and the implications for the global political agreement. Now, we have the honor to have the Deputy Minister with us, who will, of course, lead us into these briefings. We also have the ambassadors here, and our trusted Lieutenant Bitkutsie, who is with the delegation. Now, just I've noted, honourable members, some apologies. Some members, at least two members, have to be somewhere a little earlier. So we will we'll release you, or you may go as soon as you have to go. Now, without much ado, let me hand over. We'll start with Zimbabwe. Perhaps just by way of introduction, perhaps just make one remark that the I think for all of us it's a good day. It's a good day for Zimbabwe, it was a good day for South Africa, it was a good day for SADC and the continent. Because the referendum really signified the culmination of the hard work that was put into the process by all parties, including SADC, and in particular the facilitation team. May I use the opportunity to convey our gratitude and commend the role players, the stakeholders, and SADC for the work that they have done, you know, culminating in the referendum, which is by no means a small victory. It's a huge victory, you know, looking at where Zimbabwe comes from and where all of us hope to see Zimbabwe in the future. Deputy Minister, I'll hand over to you to proceed with the briefing.
Well, thank you, Chairperson, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. Our first briefing, as the Chairperson has said, that Zimbabwe has just come out from a very successful referendum. And, you know, this has been in keeping with Article 6 of the Global Political Agreement. And of course, Article 3 and 4 of the Referendum Act, Electoral Act, and they conducted the election on the 16th of March. Now, this was one of the outcome of the at the global agreement, and it was a formation of inclusive government. That was the first step, and the second important step was the referendum, and of course it would be followed by an election. Now, of course, the holding of the election now paved the way. The holding of the referendum paved the way for an election, and we expect the election to take place between July and October this year. Of course, depending on the finances, because one of the problems that Zimbabwe is facing or challenges is to get enough funding to conduct a successful election, and we're hoping that that funding will be forthcoming in due course. Of course, South Africa was part of the SADC observer mission, which we deployed in Zimbabwe, and we deployed 78 observers covering all the 9 provinces. Now, according to the statement by SEDEC, the polling was conducted procedurally and procedures for securing counting of votes were there too. Now, of course, all observers, both SEDEC and AU observers, reported that the election was relatively free and fair. In terms of the regulations, the results will be announced, and it was announced yesterday. Over 90% of the electoral voters yes in the referendum. This was expected because all the 3 major parties had asked their supporters to vote yes on the referendum, so we were expecting an overwhelming yes vote in the referendum. Of course, there were other smaller groups like ZAPU, and there were some NGOs, the NCA, who had canvassed for a no vote. But as you see, that the results showed that the overwhelming majority of the people of Zimbabwe voted yes in the referendum. Now, of course, the next step is that the whole process will go to Parliament, and the draft constitution will be introduced into a constitution bill. And then, of course, the president will have to send the bill. And once again, once it has ascended, it becomes law, and therefore we will then prepare for the final election. Now, this, we say, is a very giant step in the implementation of the GPA. We need to congratulate the people of Zimbabwe and the Zimbabwean Electoral Commission, which organized this thing in a very short time. They were able to organize a referendum. And we are hoping that this election will lead to a more peaceful election. The referendum will lead to a more peaceful election. Of course, in keeping with the SADC mandate to facilitate that is President Zuma and his facilitation team will continue to assist the people of Zimbabwe preparing for the holding of credible election. And that has been the obligation that we have. I just want to say that I think we are congratulating the people of Zimbabwe for holding a successful referendum. And I think, as the chairperson said, we need to congratulate SADC in the role that it played. I think the important thing is that SADC was able to keep the whole issue within the region. It required a lot of work, it required a lot of persuasion, it required a lot of pressure. SADC was able to tie in Robert Mugabe to certain procedures. Unlike conflicts in other parts of the world where it became internationalized, and it had all these other repercussions and problems. So I think that we did well. I think that that the South African facilitation, first under former President Mbeki, then under President Zuma, with SADC support, we were able to keep the whole thing in the region. And you could see now the results of the hard work of SADC and the SADC facilitation. Now, of course, the question is, we say it was a credible election, peaceful election. That doesn't mean that there were no areas of intimidation and violence. My own view is that, coming from the history of Zimbabwe, the recent history, the hoping that in the election that will take place will be a peaceful election. But I don't know whether you could completely eliminate certain measures of intimidation, violence here and violence there. As long as the results will reflect the will of the Zimbabwean people, and I think that is what is important. You may have heard that the police raided the offices of MDC, and one lady lawyer who went to begin to negotiate. She was also arrested and charged. So you'll have the type of issues and problems, but I think that Saraj needs to deal with those issues. I think that we feel that in the election we should deploy observers 3 months ahead of the election. It will be a phased deployment. I think that this is what will sort of reduce the temptation for violence and intimidation. At least we will face it and see that we will also, of course, we'll expect Saturday to have about 500 observers if the election takes place. South Africa, I think, will send about 80, I think, in that batch. We're also negotiating with the African Union. The African Union should also begin to send people well in advance of the election. And even the facilitation team under President Zuma, we feel should have a semi-permanent presence there from now onwards, to see that at least send one person should be all the time to interact with all the stakeholders. So, Chairperson, I think that we need to congratulate. You see, the problem is here that we still have the EU sanctions against Zimbabwe. And I think that is unfortunate because once the GPA was agreed to, the sanctions should have been lifted. And then the ZANU-PF now, of course, uses this question of sanctions to its own advantage. And to the disadvantage of opposition. Opposition are not clear where they stand for sanctions, yes or no, etc., etc. And I think that is also places ZANU-PF an advantage. And of course the opposition now is split now, MDC has split. So I think that the ZANU-PF will want as early as election as possible, depending on how they can get the finance. So there are other issues as well, which was pointed out by our observer team, the question of proper registration of the voters' roll and other issues, question of voter education, etc., needs to be attended to. But Chairperson, I'll end there. I'm sure there will be any questions.
No, thank you, DM. Honourable members, Honourable Davidson, and then followed. Okay, later. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to Mr. Davidson for his briefing. Just a question, first of all, is he aware of what was the percentage poll? Because there was a worry about apathy in that regard. Second of all, I mean, if I'm hearing the minister correctly, I do share his concern. I mean, the poll that was taking place was largely a poll that was supported by all parties, and therefore one would expect intimidation to be at a minimal level. I'm very encouraged by what he says about extending deployment of observers 3 months prior, because I think in this next election, as I think you recognise, it's going to be the three big elephants, or the two big elephants and the smaller one in the room fighting each other, and that is going to be, I think, if history is a lesson, well then it's going to be a tough one. I just want to find out, what are the mechanisms in respect of those people that are deployed when they are confronted by obvious practices which may be discrimination, intimidation, etc.? What are the procedures there to resolve such issues? What I'm looking at really the effectiveness of the deployment in terms of nipping in the bud any potential problems in the run-up to the next election. And second of all, to what extent does the facilitation team look at the bias that may be displayed by Radio Zimbabwe or the TV or whatever in that context of giving the opposition sufficient time to air its views
on radio and television and indeed in the newspapers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Minister, for the presentation. I also want to concur with you that I think we also support this commendation of the Zimbabwean people and also the forces from our own country which facilitated the this referendum to take place. I see that in the presentation there's a phrase there used about three times or more, harmonized elections. I know that there's a harmonic constitution. I just want to know, Minister, whether this gives us a glimpse into the inside of the constitution. What aspects are going to be in the constitution? If you say harmonized elections, we take it from the harmonic constitution, which speaks about aspects of the constitution. The other question is sanctions. I agree with the minister partly that we have this home African homegrown situation where we contain to the Zimbabwean affair not to have international clauses to it. But I just want to know from the minister what part did sanctions play in this, whether somehow was it negative role played by sanctions or positive, or was it any push which they maintained? So, I hear minister saying no, they have not played any role. I'm not quite sure whether I had him correctly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and also thank you to the Deputy Minister for their briefing. In my capacity as one of the observers that were there last week, came back yesterday, just a couple of things here, if you can bear with me. The first appreciation and congratulations that I want to give is first of all from the South Africa and then I think the organs. Chair, the culmination of and the outcome of the referendum on the 16th and 17th when they finished the counting must be seen in the path, I think, that South Africa took to deal with the Zimbabwean matter. And I think that would be a good discussion and a good debate, because South Africa was under tremendous pressure to screen, to bring in armies and, you know, all the things that we heard and were ridiculed of. And so I think the question is, was that path the correct path? And then the second one is, a lot of investment went into the organs. There is SADC and AU and so on. And here is a classical example of, many times people don't have, confidence in those structures. But here those structures held, and those structures proved, and those structures delivered against all odds. What was delivered might not be the absolute 100% perfect, but I don't think we can say that what was delivered indeed is taking the people of Zimbabwe somewhere. And I must say, Chair, I was there at the previous election. It was tough. Having been there now with the referendum, the improvements that you see must be spoken about. But they might not be on paper, these ones. But just the will and the tenacity of the people, and just the simple things that you're seeing around. You see the mealie fields growing again everywhere. You see the agricultural sectors. coming back, to see investment into the country, and I think those things, Chair, would maybe assist this committee if you could help us to unpack those things, because for us those are the important things that will either make or break the country. Slowly but surely, I think one of the things that really touched me is this faith that the Zimbabwean people have in South Africa, and they probably dare not fail them. You know, whether it is from supporting Bafana in so much 100% more than the South African support, and of course Katachis and Pirates, to just simply, you know, I hope are in your hands to take us somewhere. And I think those things we must not take for granted, having experienced that. I want to, Chair, speak on, for me, there are two disciplining things in the Constitution. Well, the one thing that I tried to deal with it, and that is the death penalty. It's watered down quite significantly, and it looks like there's a wall of taking it up eventually. I can understand why you couldn't get the same-sex issue right in the Constitution, but I think we must all accept you can't have rights and no rights. That one can't stand out. It just doesn't stand out internationally anyway. To provide 95% rights and then one right, you say no, look, not here, and whatever else, go back, explain to us. And the last one that we observe quite a lot is, although the Zimbabwean people went out and they voted some areas less than the others, a lot of work will have to be done on the constitutional matter. There's a lot of people that didn't know what they were voting for. They said we were told to say yes. And so I think it's a good lesson to make sure that the Constitution are being understood and be part of it. Some people ask us, please give us copies for the Constitution. So I think that one we mustn't take for granted, the knowledge. And the last one is, it was a mistake that Zach went to the elections without a head. And it's the court had to rule on them having the chair or whatever, the judge that they go eventually. And I do think my own view is we've got to do a little bit more work there on the election committee. I'm not saying they're bad, but I think there's a couple of more things that is required. I'm happy spelling out at some point. But I think there's a bit of work in it, because those are the organs that will help to bring about. You can bring observers, but if you don't sort that out, how do we interface with the police? We didn't have too exciting interactions with the police. Some did, not all of us did. I think those things are the important things. You can send the observers, but if those things are not being dealt to us, then I think that is it. And the economic matter has to. It's not a matter of waiting for the election or not. The economic matter obviously has to be engaged with. Chair, I don't want to take all your time. I'd rather stop. I've got much more to say, but your time is precious.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Deputy Minister, for the short briefing. Chair, I think it will be good if you can supply me a copy of the Constitution, because there may be a million questions. If you read through the Constitution, you'll see the answers. For example, did the people in foreign countries participate in the referendum, for example? Will they participate in elections? That will be in the Constitution. If it's possible, can they have a copy? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I also want to express my appreciation on the deployment given to me to be part and parcel of the observer mission and the OSADC and by the Parliament here. It really gave one some lessons, I must say. And firstly, I must appreciate the amount of work that the stakeholders and the need with regard to the constitutional and the formulation and participation by the people, and that through the formation of what they refer to as JOMIC, which was a joint committee of the key stakeholders, and they really attempted to their level best. And I was deployed in the central Mashonaland,
And I must say that people seemed to have the grip and of the constitution there. So that's one good lesson. It reminded me of the process that we followed in South Africa and as well at the beginning. The other issue is the question of the other issue, Chairperson, that we have to take into consideration as we move towards harmonization out the elections and harmonize elections is the issue of seriousness of politicians to talk about peace. And I read a number of articles and statements by and President Mugabe and calling on people, everybody, and to be content with the situation and be ready to go and cease fire on anybody that would be part of any belligerence. And so that was encouraging because it came out of the newspapers and his statements. And however, I believe that one or two incidences, and I must say that, let me to say that I agree entirely with the findings and of the relevant body, which gave the results. However, the issue about security and the forces, especially the role of the police, is very, very important, Chairperson, that they must not be found wanting on any incident and to be seen to be partisan in a situation that is volatile like that one, and in a situation that is fairly observed by the world very, very closely, and because it only needs and maybe one or two incidences and it mars the whole and the process. I think that it's an issue that must be emphasized by SADC and that police must be 100% impartial. The other one, Chairperson, is the issue of the time that needs to be. I agree entirely with the Deputy Minister that moving towards the upcoming elections, it would be very important that we have enough time that is given to that process. The situation there is very, very good. People are so sort of happy and they are looking forward to these elections. They want Zimbabwe to turn around. There's total commitment from the masses of the people and also from the general and the leadership or opinion makers that to meet around. There's commitment. And however, as I say, it may actually be one or two people that may mar. And therefore, it's very important that we have enough time that is given so that people are educated over and over again. I was impressed, for instance, when I got in one meeting and I listened and the person talking about and the peace begins with you, it's a slogan that they were using. Peace begins with you, peace begins with you. Each and every person must actually sort of take that slogan and in participating and ensuring that there's peace. Lastly, Chairperson, I want to also say that the issue of sanctions, as far as I am concerned now, I'm not having any mandate to this. Purely on my own analysis, Chairperson, I believe that it has to be dealt with and it must be dealt with immediately. I'm very happy about what I was listening to on the radio about the position of EU, that they are intending to lift the sanctions and immediately, because as far as I'm concerned, they are a catalyst, Chairperson, because they add to desperation, economic desperation. Economic desperation, socio-economic desperation leads to and the anger, it leads to desperation and it may actually lead to unnecessary violence moving towards elections. So it's important that they are lifted. It's important in my view that even opposition parties begin to pronounce on that very, very strongly and very early. And that's my personal opinion, Chairperson. And I really want to say congratulations to SADC, the role played by SADC, and in particular by South Africa. And because when South Africa started in that process, and about quiet diplomats, many people tried to come up with adulteration of that statement. And it's very clear now. It's beginning to yield results, but we cannot drop the gloves to use the boxing hands. We have to be on the situation throughout. And Zimbabwe is very, very critical for SADC. Thank you.
Nothing. You, okay, it's fine.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry I had to miss part of the presentation. I want to say, I would have been one of those people that would have misunderstood quiet diplomacy in the beginning, and I'm very grateful for the 14 years that I've been in Parliament to actually watch diplomacy at work, and I must say that I have been very impressed, and I'm particularly even I'm thinking of Professor Karabas and the gains that were made there as well. I will be looking more sort of closely at these things, but you mentioned the election and the funding situation, and I just wondered if are you expecting that to have financial implications for South Africa at this stage, or you know, are you seeing anything there? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for all those questions. Just to answer the last question of funding, there hasn't been any request so far from South Africa to fund the election, but I'm sure if there is a request, we will look at it favorably to see whatever funding we could give to assist the election. I think the election is important. Yeah, the question of the role of sanctions. I'm glad to hear that the EU has decided to lift sanctions, because it does affect the election, because you know some parties use the question of sanctions against their opponents. So once you remove the question of sanctions, I think that you sort of level the playing field, for other words that I can use. And of course, the constitution, as you said, that there are quite a lot of flaws in the constitution. But it's a Zimbabwean constitution. At first, you were a bit worried because ZANU-PF had rejected, you know, essential parts of the constitution. We thought that if they reject the constitution, then we go back to square one. I mean, what happens then? But it seemed all the parties agreed to the constitution, and one of the important things of the constitution, it puts the term limit for the president. It doesn't say president should be there forever. There was no term limit, of course. Mugabe has been there since independence. He's 89 years now. In 99. Yes, well, he's gone to seek the blessing of the Pope, and I'm sorry. It's a long life. But I think that there was a number of issues raised by the stakeholders on the question of the the time is availability of resources to the Electoral Commission, insufficient copies of the draft constitution, and all sorts of issues. Of course, the polarized media is one of the issues raised, and I think the observer mission did deal with some of the issues, and they got answers and correction of some of the complaints. And of course, you are right. Of course, if the broadcasting is skewed in the favor of ZANU-PF, but I think that those are some of the things I think needs to be addressed. How they're going to be addressed, I'm not sure. The polls, I think, they're very low poll. You know what the percentage polls of the ambassador, but it was quite low.
Deputy Minister, according to the results of the referendum, 3.079 voted yes, with 90% over 90%. And
9 who did know, there were about 56,000 spoiled. Now, you have about 5.5 registered Zimbabweans. Basically what it means, therefore, you have over half of the registered Zimbabweans went to school. This was a great achievement in our view, because when we were there, and then the honorable members were there as well, the issue of apathy was raised quite sharply by all the stakeholders, that because the three main political parties had agreed on the constitution, and therefore there was a risk that people of Zimbabwe might not feel the need to go and cast their vote. But they went. So it's a great achievement in any event. So basically, over half of the registered Zimbabweans went to the vote. So it's a great achievement, Deputy Minister. Maybe Deputy Minister, why I still help on the vote, was a question around harmonized election. It's a technical question, but in this Zimbabwean case, it basically means that there will be three elections. Each voter gets three ballots, one for the president, one for legislature, and one for local. So that they call it harmonized. Harmonized, in other words, they are being held in one day. In the party, they used to have preliminary elections separate from the presidential. That's what they mean by harmonized. Some of the questions raised by the honourable member, honourable minister, is that the facilitation team has got a roadmap that is implementing the Justice Zimbabwe to implement the Global Political Agreement. Many of the issues that you raised, issues around the bias in the media, the role of the police and other institutions is captured there. The role of the security establishment in the whole process is discussed there. So all those issues, it is our understanding that they will be discussed. There was also the participation of Zimbabweans abroad was a question around that. The Zimbabwean constitution does not allow the participation of Zimbabweans outside the country. If you are a Zimbabwean, you want to participate in the election, you have to go back to Zimbabwe. That's right. That is in the constitution. The copies of the constitution. I've got a copy here. I can leave it for. I've got a copy. We can leave. This is the copy. Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. No, that's fine. No, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. I think that's otherwise the rest will just comment, which we would appreciate. But again, just on the issue of dissension, just to emphasize, we met with the EU ambassadors on Sunday morning. What we like with these elections in Zimbabwe on this referendum is that all observers that were deployed, because the EU embassies, they were allowed to accreditate a maximum five officials per embassy, and they all observed the elections. And then when we compared notes in the morning on Sunday, there was a complete agreement on what had transpired, and there was a clear determination on the part of the EU to review the sanctions. So we believe, therefore, that in the next few weeks, the EU will lift certain individuals from that sanctions list. But they made it clear to us that some of the personalities in Zimbabwe, including President Mugabe, his name will still remain in that sanctions list. We leave that to them, but we continue to engage them. And the point is that the continued presence of those of certain individuals in Zimbabwe in that EU list continue to cause unnecessary tension within the inclusive government. I mean, SADC and South Africa in particular, we have been engaging with the EU. And we need to be frank with them and also be fair to them. They have responded somewhat positively because they've been sort of gradually removed a certain individual from that list. We hope, therefore, that as and when they do the review, because they indicated that after, depending on how the referendum would have gone. They were going to make a substantial review, and we're looking forward to that. There was a question, Deputy Minister, about the deployment of the observers and what role will they play. It's our understanding that the mere presence of the observers on the ground would serve as a deterrent, would be mischief makers in Africa. It's for that reason, therefore, that SADC, the limited resources that most SADC countries have, we are determined to deploy observers, as Deputy Minister has indicated, preferably 3 months before for the long-term observers, and then at least a month before for the main contingent of the observers. And in our case in South Africa, in our deployment is multi sectoral in character, in that it's going to be members of parliament, government officials, and civil society. So we would then, I believe, therefore, very soon our minister will be writing to the speaker to request parliament to designate certain members of parliament for part of that. I think we can end the motion.
I thank you, Ambassador. I think that you've covered all questions. I don't know whether there are any other questions. And only to say that that once again we like to congratulate the people of Zimbabwe for holding the successful referendum. And also, of course, we are looking forward to a successful election. You're right that maybe the referendum was a foregone conclusion, and many people would not have voted because they thought, well, there's this foregone conclusion, but when it comes to the election, there may be a bit more activity there and probably get a higher percentage of vote, and also the atmosphere will be much more tense than you've had in a referendum. But as you said, that that if SADC is going to attend to the issue, to be the responsibility of SADC to see that the election is free and fair, that in the end it should reflect the will of the Zimbabwean people with all the other challenges that may come with the election, but as long as it reflects the will of the Zimbabwean people and puts Zimbabwe on, back again on the road of democratic prosperity. And
no, thank you. Members have been trying to summarize your views and on this matter. I think everybody agreed on the process and commended Zimbabweans themselves, the stakeholders at it, for their role. And perhaps may I add, in particular, the role played by our own government, the South African government, the president and his facilitation team in particular. I think there's general agreement that we remain concerned by the isolated incidents of intimidation and violence, in spite of the fact, of course, that they did not have a material impact on the outcome of the referendum. And there's general consensus as well that it's in order for us to congratulate the ZEC for running such a credible election in spite of the short time allocated for that. The matter of the sanctions, we've been, for instance, in the SAEU, we've been engaging our counterparts in the SAEU on the matter of sanctions as themselves now becoming an obstacle to the implementation of the GPA. This is a matter we've at every, Honorable Davidson, at every SAEU we've argued, and our colleagues haven't been quite forthcoming on this matter. They seen it quite differently. They see it as gradual, but it's clear that in spite of all the gradual reduction of restrictions and sanctions, they still strike at the core of the Zimbabwean the political leadership, especially on the part of ZANU-PF, which creates a serious problem. And as such, I think we also agree that we need to call on the EU continuously to lift all sanctions and restrictions to allow for the process, or at least to allow for the country to move forward. Honourable members, I need you to indicate whether that summary is accurate. Does it reflect your views on the matter? Okay. No, thank you so much. The Deputy Minister and your team, thank you so much for that briefing. Now, before we go over to the matter of Western Sahara, and perhaps I think it would be amiss of me, of us as the committee, not to acknowledge the work done by PICO. We know that PICO is doing a lot of work. In fact, PICO is spearheading the process. It's doing the hard work on the ground, and your efforts are duly noted and commended. DM, please relay our word of congratulations and commendation to our department for the work. Honourable members, I'm thinking there might be another member going. I think it's Honourable Dickinson. Oh, sorry, Honourable Ngonyama. And Dickinson, by the way. You indicated that you have a meeting somewhere around 12 or so. Or is it? Yeah, no, it's fine. But I thought perhaps before we go to that, that we deal with the two issues that will need a quorum before another member leaves and we lose that quorum. So can we quickly deal with the matter of the draft report and the draft minutes just before we go over. So, okay. Eva. If you leave, we don't. So that exactly is my fear. If you leave, we don't. So just be with us 5 minutes. I have one set of minutes here. Do you have the one of the 20th of February? That's what all of us have. Okay. Can we... yes. Let's suspend the report until then. You don't have minutes, but it would have been sent to you. Please send. Can you just hand over a copy of the minutes to the members? But they would have been sent to you in advance, honourable members. Yeah. Can you in the meantime share? I trust that you have at least gone through the minutes beforehand because they were sent, I think, last week already. No, it's fine. Okay, the ones that do not have right now, please share. I think there's one member there. Okay. Now, let's go to page one. Members, the attendance there is in order. Page two of the minutes, introduction and discussions. Page three, discussion continued. And then point four, in order. Page four, discussions, 4.1, continued up to the adoption of the First Home Committee Program. Sorry. Okay, let me go to the last page. The last page, there's a proposal for adoption. There's a proposal by Honorable Suleiman, it's seconded by Honorable Davidson. Okay. Then the last matter, honorable members, can I request that we deal with the draft report at a later stage? You would have the part. There's some discussion that will have to take place under recommendations of the draft report, right? So what I thought is perhaps we should just it's on page 14, on page 14 of the draft report. Let's rather give honourable members the opportunity to, you know, think through what the possible recommendations might have to be, because if there's one thing I hate, it's a report only to be noted in the House, then really there's no point in going through all the trouble, spending thousands of taxpayers' money just for a report to be noted in the House. It's just not right. So let's rather apply our minds, you know, and have a thorough discussion on those recommendations. Agreed. Okay. Now, thank you so much. Thank you so much, honourable members. Let's then return now to the updates on the matter of West Sahara. DM. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. We're just giving a brief account of Western Sahara. Now, Western Sahara is one of these occupied territory. It was a Spanish colony, and when Spain granted independence, it was then occupied by Morocco. And it is not recognized as part of Morocco either by the United Nations or by the African Union. And of course, although Morocco claimed that it was part of the Morocco Kingdom, but the International Court of Justice gave an advisory opinion. When they looked at all the facts, and they had concluded that Western Sahara was never part of Morocco or part of the Morocco Kingdom. And the United Nations, of course, declared it as it is a non-self-governing territory awaiting decolonization to a referendum on self-determination. That's how the UN has described it. Of course, there's been, at first there was an armed struggle, and then there is a ceasefire. But the situation, of course, has continued to deteriorate. There's been a lot of human rights violation there. And there's a violation also on the right to freedom of expression, assembly, freedom of association of the Sahrawi. And the rights have been continuously suppressed by the Moroccan government. Furthermore, of course, there's a complete blackout. Media are not allowed to go report what is happening there. Now, what is of interest is that this is the only UN mission, United Nations mission for the referendum in Sahara. It's the only mission that does not have a human rights, haven't got a human rights component. So they do not deal, the mission, when it reports to the United Nations, does not deal with human rights issues. Now, the Robert F. Kennedy Center visited the occupied territory, and also Tenduk. Tenduk is a refugee camp. Many of us have been there to see how the refugees live. And of course, they experienced the first-hand brutality committed by the Moroccan security against the Sahrawi people. The delegation was also subject to intimidation and harassment, and they concluded that there is serious human rights violation, and Sahrawi human rights defenders are prohibited from registering as civil society organization. Now what has happened, there was the, at first there was this Ada Baker position where the United Nations declared the Security Council in a resolution that there should be a referendum there to determine the will of the people of Sahrawi. Now, then of course, Baker didn't reach very much because the Polisario, that is the group that is fighting for independence, while they accepted the Baker plan for a referendum, Morocco refused to accept the plan, so there was a stalemate there. And then they appointed Christopher Ross, and he was also trying to get a referendum there, but without any success. Now, the United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon presented an annual report on the situation in April 2012. Now, he said that there is much concern about human rights violation by the authority in Morocco, and also many Sahrawi people are currently facing trial before a permanent military tribunal of the Royal Armed Forces of Rabat. Now this raises a serious problem because the tried people in military court rather than in ordinary civilian court was also quite a problematic issue. And of course, and they would not get, and they did not get a fair trial as they would get in a civilian court. Now on 17 February 2013, 25 Sahrawi human rights activists were sentenced by Morocco military court. They were detained since 2010, and the sentences range from 2 years to life imprisonment. Now, according to international law, a Morocco military court does not have jurisdiction to prosecute acts and events taking place in Western Sahara, which is not my territory. Of course, several international bodies condemned the sentencing, Amnesty International and the African Commission of Human Rights amongst them. We, of course, on March 2013, we issued a statement condemning the sentencing of 25 Sahrawi human rights activists. And we urge Morocco to release all political prisoners and prisoners of conscience who are in prison and to start negotiation with the Polisario Front. Now, of course, we say the right of self-determination was based on our own experience in South Africa, and which is according to the United Nations Charter and the Constitutive Act of the AU. You know, the AU Constitutive Act said, and it has been the policy of the African Union, that we should recognize the pre-colonial borders. When independence was granted, we said that even from the OAU and the African Union, that there shouldn't be any reconfiguration of the pre-colonial borders, unless, of course, it is as a result of negotiation between the various parties, like you had in Sudan and South Sudan. Of course, we have always supported the self-determination of the people of Western Sahara. This is as a result of principle of multilateralism and international legality. We always seek a just and acceptable political solution to the question of the self-determination of Western Sahara. This, of course, is a centrality of the EU and of the UN and the EU. Now, of course, we deal with respect for international human rights law in occupied territory, notably the right to freedom of association, assembly, movement, and expression.
And of course we have called to end the illegal exploration and exploitation of natural resources in Western Sahara. The sentencing of 25 human rights activists serve as a confirmation of the non-resolution of Western Sahara conflict. The presence in Morocco of the United Nations Security Council's stifled attempts aimed at including a human rights component. Now, there's need for intensified effort by our allies of the Sahari Democratic Republic, that is South Africa, Algeria, Angola, and Nigeria, aimed at exerting pressure on Morocco to comply with international law and UN resolution. And the African Union, we feel, should grant greater participation in the negotiation between Polisario and Morocco, and the mandate of United Nations Force should be extended to incorporate human rights monitoring mechanism, and the United Nations should urgently expedite the resolution issue of Western Sahara by taking all necessary measures for the organization of a referendum of self-determination. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as President Zuma, in his State of the Nation address, also referred to Western Sahara. Honourable member, I think that just briefly, give you a background of the Western Sahara. We think that there has to be a referendum. There was an agreement by the United Nations Security Council that there should be a referendum to determine the will of the people of Western Sahara. Now, the Moroccans are saying that at first there was a question of who should vote and who should not vote, because Morocco had transferred quite a lot of its people into Western Sahara. Polisario eventually said no. Whoever is in Western Sahara, who are staying in Western Sahara, could vote. So that issue was cleared, because I think Polisario was feeling that many of the Moroccans themselves would want to be in Western Sahara. Maybe they'll get more freedom in Western Sahara than getting in Morocco. The Moroccans are saying, okay, there should be a referendum that will give autonomy to Western Sahara, autonomous state within the sovereignty of Morocco. So the referendum should say, do you want autonomy or you do not want autonomy? But the Polisario is saying no. They should say in the referendum, do you want autonomy or self-determination? Now that is where the whole thing became stuck. Obviously Morocco is not prepared to grant self-determination to the people of Western Sahara. And regrettably, they have the support of the P3, the Western countries, France, United States. There's a lot of exploration of mineral wealth and fishery. I'm told now by the ambassador that the EU now has rescinded that they have withdrawn the agreement they had to exploit mineral wealth or fishery in that region. And so it has been the last vestige of colonialism there, of decolonization. And in terms of the United Nations, on 14th of December 2010, when they celebrated the 50th anniversary of the United Nations, and they declared that the granting declaration on granting of independence to the colonial people is an important aspect of the United Nations, and Western Sahara falls under that. We at first did not recognize Saharawi or Polisario when we got our freedom here, because the United Nations was saying to us, look, there is this bigger process that's going on, United Nations, where he's trying to resolve the problem by having a referendum. And they told us we should not rock the boat, no, we should just wait, we should not go in to recognize the Saharawi People's Republic. But in 2004, when the Baker when the Baker Project collapsed, South Africa then decided to recognize the Sahrawi People's Republic and open an embassy of the Sahrawi people here. Morocco reacted and they withdrew the ambassador. Now that was very strange because Nigeria also has the same position, but they didn't withdraw the ambassador from Nigeria. Algeria has the same position in many countries, but why they targeted South Africa? I asked one day the foreign minister when I met him, why you targeted South Africa, why don't you do the same to Nigeria? He says, no, South Africa is much more influential internationally, that's why they targeted South Africa. And they refused to accept our ambassador. Ambassador Suleiman was assigned to be ambassador then, and we wrote a letter, but they didn't reply. So we do not have an ambassador, we have a charge therefore. In Morocco, we also have a charge therefore. So this issue, we feel, has to go back to the United Nations Security Council and the EU to begin to resolve this issue. Moroccans are very hardline. The king has got a law or a declaration that anyone in Morocco that supports the Polisario or the Western Sahara people to be independent is a crime. So nobody in Morocco. I remember when this thing came up, I issued a statement condemning it. I was told by my MC, you don't condemn the king. You have to be very careful about condemning the king, because he's the king of Morocco. But even with the changes that is taking place, some reform that is taking place, I think, when I spoke to the foreign minister one time, he said, look, everybody in Morocco are united on this issue. I said, everybody in South Africa is also united on this issue. Why don't we just leave this aside and have full diplomatic relations? There are other areas in which we could cooperate. But, well, they said, yeah, yes, but they haven't come back to us. So, I just to tell you that as South Africans, we have been very supportive of the self-determination of the people of Western Sahara. We have urged the ending of illegal exploitation of mineral in the Western Sahara occupied territory. And we want the United Nations to have a human rights component in its mission. We can't understand why this mission, only mission of United Nations, doesn't have a human rights component. It doesn't deal with the human rights issue. And of course we have also demanded the lifting of the media blackout in that area, and we want also urge for humanitarian support to the refugees. I have Ambassador Suleiman who is dealing with this region, and I'm sure if there are any questions he will also assist in your background or to some of the questions.
Okay. Thank you. Do you perhaps want to add?
I think Deputy Minister has covered, in essence, the issue of Western Sahara. So if there are specific issues the Honourable Members wish to raise, then we can try to address them.
No, thank you so much. Honourable Members, Baba.
Mr. Chairman, these negotiations with the Polisario, are they still being on? What are they based on? Because the minister gave two options, the referendum or not. I mean, are they going on? What are they based on now? What is being pursued in those negotiations?
Very brief on this, but I remember we got a briefing from those two delegations. One of the issues in terms of who should vote was the position of the nomadic tribes that went up and down the course of seasons.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of negotiations, as you know, the Deputy Minister has spoken about the Baker Ban, and the Baker Ban basically was culminated in the United Nations Resolutions 1491, which had given the people of Western Sahara two options, one of self-determination, as Deputy Minister steps in, or the, to be an autonomous region within the Moroccan kingdom. All parties to the conflict. If we go back a little bit, Morocco, the Kingdom of Morocco claimed the land from Morocco right up to the Senegal River. So that means including Mauritania. And after the demise of King Hassan, in 2002, the Moroccans then accepted to waive the so-called claim to the state of Mauritania. However, the issue of Western Sahara remained, and they still claim that Western Sahara is part of the Moroccan kingdom, and this is a non-negotiable position. And it's precisely for that reason that when United Nations Resolution 1491 had come about, they did not accept it. Algeria, where the Polish, most of the Sahrawi refugees reside in, had accepted the Baker Plan or the United Nations Resolution. So did Mauritania. And, of course, the United Nations had passed this resolution. However, Morocco, the problem with that resolution that gave all parties to the conflict had to sign on to it. And that gave an exit strategy for the Moroccans not to sign it. And precisely as a result of that, that resolution could not be implemented. However, subsequently, the Americans had been negotiating direct talks between the parties. But it comes back to the same point of where they cannot agree. Remember, the ceasefire agreement was in 1991, even before we went into elections. And to this day, we don't have any movement on this. When you look back at the question of what happened in the Arab world, and the Sahrawis contend that the so-called Arab Spring started in the occupied territories. Unfortunately, we had changes in other parts of North Africa, but not in the Sahrawi or the occupied territories. The negotiation is going on, but I think there is a change of thinking that is now surfacing within the international community, or should I say, within Europe and America. The minister had mentioned the Robert Kennedy Center for Human Rights that undertook a visit to both the camps in Algeria and also to Morocco and also to the occupied territories. And their findings had also reflected the human rights right of the Sahrawis. And there, as recent as last month, they had called a conference of the United Nations, and where they asked our embassy to also to co-host it, which has taken place to expose the human rights issues. We find also Sweden has taken apart and now have recognized the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic or the Polisario's right, the Sahrawi's right to self-determination. So I think there is a change. And also the fact that the European Union, and I think also in our engagement as the portfolio committee, when we meet our counterparts at the European Union, that probably also had an impact on the change of heart of the European Union. But we need to go beyond that. And the only way we can do that is to put pressure on the international community. Because it is, as Deputy Minister had alluded to, it is not the issue of South Africa. This is an issue, the recognition of the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic is a membership of, they are a founding member of the African Union. So it cannot be us that can be taken to task. But of course they have they feel that if they are able to break our back, then the issue of the Sahrawis will be in their eyes forgotten. So in as far as coming to the question of negotiations, not much has been done. The nomadic tribes, this is just an excuse that one of the things that King Hassan had done. Those nomadic tribes, you see, one of the biggest number of Moroccans, he kicked them, many of them, out of the kingdom, and they are now residing in Europe, most of them in the Netherlands. So, and those people were not basically coming from they have accepted the register of all those people that have arrived, and the Polisario had gone further, because in terms of what we had in the presentation, the fact that the people in the occupied territories who were originally Moroccans, and the Moroccan strategy was to flood the occupied territories in order that they will, if they knew that there would be a referendum at a certain time, at a particular time, and they would probably then vote. But I think the people had now come to realize that it is they have a better future under a democratic Arab Democratic Republic than they would have under the Moroccan Kingdom. So it's not an issue, but of course the Moroccans, the parliament, I think honourable member was referring to the parliamentary committee that had come here, and this is one of the ways they think that if they engage us, they will probably give us the notion of what the issue is. But I think they have also come to accept the population just of and the unanimity on that. So it's no more an issue. Thank you, Chairperson.
I do not. If you go to the refugee camp Tindouf and you interact with the police, you'll find them very moderate, very secular in outlook, and you know, very modern. And I say to some of the Western friends or the Americans, I say, you see, if you do not resolve this problem, you are creating fertile ground for extremist elements to move in. I'm surprised the Al-Qaeda elements haven't moved in, because that's a way, because of your inability to resolve this problem. And I think that is right, because there are people there, and they're not the extremist type of people. They are very, very moderate, secular, advanced-thinking people, the Polisarios. And the inability of the Western countries, for whatever reason, because they have a relationship with Morocco, and some of them are exploiting the natural resources and the fishery there. And Morocco even pulled out from the African Union, because the African Union now recognizes Sahrawi. And I think that what is needed now is the matter should go UN and the EU to see that some resolution takes place. And the ceasefire holding the Polisario have not gone back to war, the armed attack. And I think that the patience, I'm sure, is running out now. Thanks.
No, thanks. I attended an international conference on Western Sahara in December in Algeria, and we heard testimonies from Sahrawi, Sahrawis, ordinary Sahrawis, talking about their experiences. Some were coming from Tindouf, Layoun, and other areas. In refugee camps, and they spoke of the deportations that we were talking about. They spoke of the forced removals. They spoke of the importation of large numbers of Moroccans into Western Sahara. Some 30,000 at a time passed in literally into the territories, and clearly at the time. But then at the time, Morocco was more amenable to the autonomy, referendum on the autonomy, and they were hoping to influence the numbers. But one of the tragedies was really the desperation of those Sahrawis, and those, some of the people who spoke were families of the detainees who were subsequently sentenced in the military tribunals, when you deal, Deputy Minister, with the political issues, you know, in terms of briefings and so on, is one thing. But when the pain and suffering of people is personalized, terms of when you meet the people and they tell you about their own experiences, it's quite a painful, painful thing. And when this sentencing and so on took place, the, of course, having had the benefit of, you know, of, you know, talking to those people on one-on-one, one could not help but think, you know, what is happening to, you know, to those people at a personal level. Now, the my own take, honourable members, is that I think we've had a couple of briefings now on this matter, and Parliament has to say something about this matter. And my own suggestion in this regard would be that we move our own discussion around this issue to the next meeting of the committee, our first meeting, and that we work on a possible text summary of all the briefings that we have, and what we think as a committee should happen, and how Parliament should engage with the matter further, following this. What I will do with staff is to work on a summary of all the issues, apart from the report as such, but work on a summary of all the issues, coupled with some of the matters arising from the reports, the observations in the previous reports, and try to come up with some concrete suggestions around how we could engage, well, how we could engage possibly as a parliament. What we'll do is we'll engage with the honourable members themselves so that we incorporate your ideas, if any, so that we have a concrete proposal in terms of moving forward. Does that carry your approval? Is there anything else that you may want to say around the briefing? Nothing. DM?
No, thanks. I think that will be a useful suggestion if you keep live on the agenda the whole question of Western Sahara. But if Parliament leader ever goes on a visit, that will be useful to go to the refugee camp. And it's a very vast area to see people staying there. Even the President and the Secretary General, Opal decided to stay there. So they don't stay outside of the refugee camp, their own house there. And it would be useful for many people have gone there in the past. I myself have been there on one occasion. And I think it's a good experience to interact with people and to find out how they are living and what is the thinking of the people in those refugee camps. Yeah, it's a very huge area. I mean, built houses and things like that. I've been there for over 10, 11 years. Yeah, 13 years. Oh, 3-0 or something, 13 years. And it's the place where, you know, people are living and they have their own cultural activities and political activities. Otherwise, I think that we have mentioned, as our president has mentioned in his State of the Nation address, that we continue to support the struggle of the people of Western Sahara, and through our presence at the United Nations and in the AU, we'll do everything to see that the issue is resolved. And in our interaction with the P3, that we have always. We've always raised the question of Western Sahara with them, and we'll continue to do that. Thanks.
No, thank you so much, DM. You know, I'm actually just reminded of ironies, if you wish, one irony, that during that conference, there was a MP for France. And we were shocked
Now he had the opportunity to say something. And we were shocked to hear that he heard about Western Sahara, you know, within their parliament, really for the first time in 2012, earlier in the year. It's simply, you know, there's, he's saying that it, there's, look, there's dissenting voices, and once some dissenting voice calls the name Western Sahara, is sort of brushed off. You know, this is a madman, he doesn't know what he's talking about. It is not a matter that is in the mainstream of France's politics, and yet we know that France is such a key, indispensable force, in fact, so to speak, on this matter on Western Sahara. It's quite ironic. But be that as it may, DM, thank you so much, and your team, thank you so much for the briefing. And we hope we'll have these engagements on this matter. Thank you. Honorable members, thank you so much.
Yeah, we got it.